Susan Powell there. Now, how do you save a dying language? California is home to the greatest diversity of Native American tribes in the United States. Still has 90 separate identifiable languages, but many are being lost as the last fluent speakers die and English dominates. Alistair Leithhead reports.
Polish.
Lessons in a language that was almost lost.
Kirby.
For half the school day, children here are taught in the Yurok tribal language. At one point, only a handful of fluent elders survived, and it nearly died with them.
It's really cool when the kids are learning in school, they take it home, and the parents get interested and want to learn, and, you know, and there's, I think, an element of guilt in there that parents feel like, oh, my kid's learning, I should probably learn, and so it's starting to grow.
It's an ancient culture. Today's reservation runs either side of the river, from the ocean to the mountains. Salmon has always been their staple and their living, as it is today. The songs sung in the Yurok language pass the long oral history on to a new generation.
If you lose your culture, like you lose a huge chunk of who you are. The same thing with the language. And certainly the spiritual knowledge and cosmic knowledge that we have is really important.
The tribes become very integrated, but wants to keep the young interested in their past. Things like how to make the old staple of acorn soup.
Culture and tradition are hugely important to the people that live on the banks of this river, and having a thriving language is a key part of that. They hope in the future that children will be brought up speaking Yurok, a language that's been around for thousands of years.
It wasn't easy to save. Andrew Garrett trawled old field notes, recordings, and interviewed elders to formalise an oral language, making it easier to teach.
The language will never be the same as it was 50 years ago or 100 years ago. But I now feel what I didn't feel 5 or 10 years ago, that the language will continue to thrive in a probably slightly altered form.
Warnock, Essie, Chance, Moonche.
A huge step was getting it on the high school syllabus and finding students who were interested.
I'm learning Yurok to preserve the language and keep it alive.
My grandpa speaks it, so it's nice to like exchange words.
Will you be continuing it?
Yes, I'll be in Yurok too next year.
Kusur Nuri Wachisha.
The language isn't saved yet, but an ancient river culture is a step closer to being revived and restored. Alistair Leithhead, BBC News, at the Yurok Reservation in Northern California.
Let's speak to Mark Turin, who joins us from Yale University, director of the World Oral Literature Project. Sad, but is it more than sad when languages die out? Because isn't this just Darwinism in action?
Well, let's focus for a moment on the fact that this is an incredible story of hope and perseverance and endurance. And I commend the reporter for picking up this tale and running with it, because so often we hear stories of language death. Here's a story of language reclamation and survival.
Yes, but the question was, though, I mean, however attractive it is, isn't this just the Darwinian process? It is the survival of the fittest. If more people are speaking another language, then that's what happens, and that's just the way life is.
I think that's a common perception, but I think the situation is more complex than that. That way of thinking reflects, I think, the Anglo-Saxon worldview, which is dominated by monolingualism. For most of the world's history, in most countries, people have been multilingual, speaking many different languages. So Darwinian survival may be an appropriate way to think about species, but I don't think it works really for languages. States have been punitive about indigenous languages for most of the world's history. Now we have a chance to celebrate some of that diversity.
And when you look at, say, countries like Spain under Franco, who banned people speaking Basque or Catalan, what sort of effort is needed by state authorities after something like that to rekindle and get that interest going again in a language?
I think to support speech and minority speech forms around the world, we need a coming together of two things. State support from the top down with resources and I suppose a progressive nation state that acknowledges linguistic diversity. And at the same time, you need community interest. And sometimes those things don't come together. There are cases when the state is ready, the community are reluctant. And most cases, it's the other way around, where communities want to do something about their languages, but states don't have the resources.
How many languages do you think have disappeared in the past 50 years? And what is the projection?
Many linguists talk about one language dying every couple of weeks. Now, it's not to say that at the same time on Sunday, another speech form just passes away. But of the world's 6,500 languages, about half of those are endangered. There are many different reasons that languages can become endangered, and sometimes people willingly give up their speech forms, but other times a community themselves, maybe the last remaining speakers, a handful of people, themselves die out, and when they go, they take their languages with them.
And that is what you mean, is it, by a language being moribund, that there's an older generation
Correct.
Which speaks, but the children aren't. And how do you make a sort of a language which is spoken perhaps by people in their 80s sexy and attractive for children? I mean, do you allow them to bastardize it? It becomes their own slang, and they can incorporate perhaps their own language into that as well?
Languages succeed when they're attractive to speak and when states are supportive of their speech and use. So there are wonderful stories from New Zealand of language nests for Maori, which have now been taken up also in Hawaii. And that really focuses on intergenerational transmission. And that's really the key to your point. Older people have to work with younger people to encourage language transmission across the generations, and for young people to want to sing, speak, rap, maybe even tweet in their own languages. Technology has a role to play here also. Increasingly, the web is a great place for languages to thrive and survive.
Yeah, I mean, so if you make it cool, that is probably, as you say, the key. When people talk about a language being lost every 2 to 3 weeks, though, how separate, how different, how identifiably unique are these languages? Or are we looking really at dialects, at languages which have the same root, you know, either Romance or whatever? Can you just help us a bit with that?
I'm living in the States at the moment, speaking to you from Yale, and I often joke that I'm divided here by a common language with many of my colleagues. So yes, the English spoken in the UK and in the States is the same language. But all too often, we think of dialects in quite a disparaging way. And really, a language is a dialect that has an army, a navy, and a flag. In many parts of the world, and my work is in South Asia, particularly in Nepal, in the Himalayan range, you could argue that a language is a dialect that has its own library and a font and some form of written tradition. And languages that are primarily oral, which is most of the world's languages after all, are often called dialects, but they are distinct speech forms that are not mutually intelligible with other speeches.
All right, it is absolutely fascinating. Mark Turin, thank you very much indeed for joining us from Yale here on the programme.